Well, Imba, where the world congregates. Well, it's Saturday already, so you could be going to the funeral, you could be going to a ding, you could be going to a certain event, and you need that Imba. Imba is your savior, my friend. You know, make sure that you download that app, and you will thank me later. Good morning. It's a Saturday morning. Welcome to your favorite station, Eagle FM. And my name is Mike Oshoveli, and this is Mind Matters, the program that has to do with your mind. Anything that has to do with your mind goes here. Anything that has to do with your mind goes. So, welcome. And it's happening here in the north. Yesterday, it was Miss Teen Pageant. And who was crowned? Chantel Buren. Yeah, Chantel Buren was actually crowned Miss Teen Namibia 2025. Well, it's going to happen this evening as well. We will be also then crowning Miss Namibia 2025. This is a time I wish I was a girl. I wish I was a woman. You know, I'm pretty. I'm tall. So welcome and good morning to you wherever you find yourself in this beautiful land of ours. And it's a time for that time. It's that time again when we get into issues that have to do with our mental health. From now until the hour of 1 o'clock, we call this time a mental health hours. And as I said, this is also a period where I welcome anybody. If you are going through some distress or some emotional distress, some issues that you don't know how to deal with it, or someone that you know that is going through these issues and you don't know how to go about it. So this is the platform we have created for you here on Eagle FM for you to just come in and say, I have a problem, or do I need a telephone number for someone I can talk to, or whatever the case may be. So you are most welcome to come through during this time and be able to talk to us, to talk to me, and to talk to our listeners. And I can tell you, we have people that are very acquainted and expert in most of the subject that we talk here. But today, what are we looking at today? So we're looking at why Namibian men are dying in silence. Why are Namibian men are dying in silence? So let me welcome you again. If you just were scrolling and you just happened to, you know, to tune in. So welcome. Welcome on board to you wherever you are tuning in from. Whether it's from Katima Mulilo all the way to Oranjemund. So this is, I'm your host, Michael Chevelli, on your favorite station, Eagle FM. So you know, today I want to talk about something a little heavy. It's going to be heavy, and I'm not going to do that alone. I would have Father Werner Afunde, a Lieutenant Father Werner Afunde. He's a Catholic priest, who actually a director of an organization called Londoloka Counseling Association. Londoloka means get off from the tree. So get off from the tree. If you actually hanging yourself, and you know, the whole idea, Londoloka means get off from the tree. So I will be speaking to him. This organization specifically, you know, deal with people that, that want to, end their life. So we will be talking and hear from him just in probably 10 to 15 minutes. So as I said, we're going to talk something a little heavy. This is something that is not easy to talk about. So, but it's something that is so, so important. So it is about our brothers. It's about our sons. It's about our fathers and mothers as well. It's about our friends. And specifically, we're going to look at, you know, why Namibian men are dying in silence. So we all have seen the news. We have had stories, and sometimes this is happening in our own families. Too many of our men are fighting a silent battle. They are fighting a silent battle, a battle they feel they have to fight alone. Many men feel that this is a battle they have to fight alone. And sometimes that battle becomes too much. So, and that's why they end up, you know, taking their own lives. So it's not only men, women have, it's also happening, you know, to women as well. But specifically today, we're focusing on men. So, and in Namibia, we teach our boys to be strong, you know, to be tough, to be a man. We say, a man provide. We say, men don't cry. So these are the things that we say, you know. And do we know what we instilling in them? And I'm no. So remember this. When I'm saying these kind of things, these are not... When we say this thing, you want... It has a positive and also a negative side to it. So when we say things like that, it actually instills resilience into the person. Instill that strength and that, you know, that no die attitude, because I am a man, or instill something that I need to provide for my family. I need to, you know, it does. But it also has side effect, as I would call it a side effect. It also has, it's a sort of double side, you know. But it's also telling them, hey, don't focus on, if you are going through certain emotions, don't worry about that. You're a man, you know? So don't worry about the kind of troubles or issues that you're going through. You're a man, forget about it. But it has a dire consequences as we're seeing that. So, and if you are, if I'm here on your favorite station radio to say, I'm here to say, maybe we have it a little bit wrong, so we need to balance it so that real strength is not hiding your pain. Real strength is not about hiding your pain. Real strength is not suffering in silence. So real strength is having the courage to say, hey man, I'm not okay. Maybe that's a real strength, to be able to say, I am not okay. Real strength is reaching out to a friend and say, my brother, I'm struggling. I am struggling. Eh? And if you are listening right now and you feel the weight on your shoulder, the weight of not having a job, the weight of not being able to provide to your family, the weight of being hopeless, the stress of providing for your family, the feeling that you have failed. You feel that way. Listen to me. You're not a failure. You are not a failure. And you are more than your job. You are more than your job. You are more than your problems. Remember that. You are more than your problems. You are a valuable part of this nation, and you are loved. And we have to say that your feelings are real. What you're going through is real. And it's okay to talk about it. So it's okay to talk about it. And this is the start where we want to normalize where men talk about their emotions. So we know there are a lot of things maybe that we're going to discover through our discussion today that, well, we're told, you know, I can't talk about my problem. That's weakness. Yeah. I can't open up. You know, I'm exposing myself, and that it doesn't make me a man. You know? So I'm saying it's okay to talk about it. So find one person, just one, a friend you trust, an uncle, a pastor, doesn't matter, a wife, and just start talking. So you don't have to to have all the answers. You don't have to have all the answers. Even the one you're listening, you don't have to have all the answers. Just start the conversation. So just start the conversation. The conversation is the first, bravest step you can make. And for those of us who are listening, those of us who are, who would be, let be that person. You must be, let be that person. Okay? When you see your friend, don't just ask, how are you? Ask him, how are you really? You understand? That's make a difference. How are you really? Don't just ask, how are you? No. And then listen. Don't just ask, how are you, really? And then go away. And then listen, really listen. Without judgment. Just be there. So, Namibia is the land of the brave. And being brave means facing our struggle together. And as a family, and as a community here, Eagle FM community, let's make sure no man feel he is alone in this fighting. So, right, stay around. As I said, I'm not alone. I'm going to try to get my guest and see what we can bring for you. Stay tuned. We will be back. And I'm going to leave you now with, let me go classic today. You know, those old songs of, you know, Dolly Parton, Don Williams, those kind of, you know. Okay, let's get Dolly Parton, Code of Color, Code of Many Colors. Maybe you haven't heard this song for quite a while I'm getting to my guest.
The years I go wandering once again, back to the seasons of my youth, and I recall the box of rags that someone gave us, and how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colors, but every piece was small. I didn't have a coat, and it was way down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, sewing every piece with love. She made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of. While Mama sewed, she told a story from the Bible she had read about a coat of many colors Joseph wore, and then she said, I hope this coat will bring you good luck and happiness. And I just couldn't wait to wear it, and Mama blessed it with a kiss. My coat of many colors that my mama made for me, made only from rags, but I wore it so proudly. Although we had no money, I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors, Mama made for me. So with patches on my breeches, holes in both my shoes, in my coat of many colors, well, I hurried off to school just to find the others laughing and making fun of me. And my coat of many colors Mama made for me. And oh, I couldn't understand that, 'cause I felt I was rich. And then I told them of the love my mama sewed in every stitch. I even told them all that story Mama told me while she sewed, and why my coat of many colors was worth more than all of their clothes. They didn't understand it, and I tried to make them see. One is lonely, poor, lonely if they choose to be. Oh yeah, it's true, we had no money, but I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors Mama made for me, made just for me.
All right. Okay. Ooh, that was a bit too much. Okay. Good afternoon. Good morning and welcome back from that song by Dolly Parton, Coat of Many Colors. All right. That's a bit of a noise. Yeah. All right. Okay, so welcome back. Our time is about 19 minutes past the hour of 11. As I said earlier on, we will have a guest on our show this morning. And right now, I have Lieutenant Father Vin Nafundi, a Catholic priest. Father, welcome to Mind Matters, and good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Mike.
Yeah, so Father, I think there's a replay at the back.
Okay.
Yeah, I can hear myself, and that it doesn't sound good on this side. All right. Did you sort that out?
Do you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just that there was a little bit of a background of my. I can hear myself a little bit. Yeah. Okay. Now it's okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Father. We are talking about the why men actually are dying in silence, and we're talking about suicide in our country, where has become actually one of the leading, cause of death in Namibia. We almost have someone dying every day. But with those statistics, the men are actually the one that taking up much of the statistics. So, and you're a director of Londoloka Counseling Association, an organization that purely dedicated to people who are, taking their own life, or who have ideas, or who are thinking of taking their own lives. So can you give us a little bit of a background? What is that? What is the organization about, and what is that you do? Just a little bit of background so that we can go now into the discussion.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mike Aidula.
Yeah.
As we know, after independence, the rate of suicide has increased a lot.
Yeah.
And we have lost many lives.
Mm.
So the Catholic Church, namely myself and the Archbishop, we sat down and we look at how do we respond to the increase of suicide in order to reduce the number of suicide. This happened after my studies and my research on suicide. And we agreed that I should put up an awareness program,
yeah.
A suicide awareness program and prevention as a response from the Catholic Church to this pressing issue.
Yeah.
So then I started conducting awareness program on suicide awareness prevention, suicide warning signs, and so on and so on. And I did that mainly within the Catholic parishes, where I trained volunteers, especially in the fourth northern regions.
Yeah.
Volunteers, so that they can attend to the cries of the nation in the areas where they are. Uh-huh. And people have responded very well.
Yeah.
So far in the northern part, there are closer to 500 volunteers who can offer the first-hand kind of counseling session.
Yeah.
And as a result of that one, people were very happy. Many have responded. And we even managed to establish this association called Londoloka Counseling Association. The thing Londoloka came as a result of more people who are committing suicide in the northern region are hanging themselves.
Yeah.
So we are saying, Rondoroka, come down, let us talk. Let us talk. We can find a solution to your problem. So it's an organization that is a voluntary organization, and people, and the motto is, we care about you.
All right. No, that's but the organization is all, it's actually providing counseling to people in the community where they are. These volunteers are providing counseling in the community where they are. They are only not, they are not providing counseling only to the Catholic people, but also to the whole nation in wherever they find themselves, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Now let's come back to, our topic of today. We're seeing that suicide has become really a pressing issue in Namibia right now. Why is this the case?
The first thing is, when you look at the term itself, it carries a tone of disapproval. It is from the Latin word. Sui means self.
Means self, yeah.
Yes. Side means to chop or to kill. One, to kill.
Yeah.
So when we put it together, it is to kill oneself.
Yeah.
And to kill oneself in society, that is disapproved.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if everybody kills himself or herself in Namibia, who will save life? Or if anybody kills another person, who stays behind? So the pressing issue is raised out of concern. Why this disapproval act is allowed to continue? Because it destroys life. In Namibians, not only the Christians, we value the importance of human life. And we are responsible for one another. And we want our brothers and sisters to be saved and to be kept alive. Because some of these people are very important persons in society. And some of them, they are breadwinners. So it is an act that is not actually approved. That's why people are talking about it. Anything which is disapproved by society, people are going to talk about it. And that calls a response to that cry. So it is a cry that has never been heard in Namibia ever before, the way it is. So it needs a response. That's why it is a pressing issue. And we are a small nation. We are a small nation. We need to find ways how to reduce this suicide rate drastically.
Well, we see that we are the fourth in Africa. We are actually the fourth in Africa, and also in the world we are about 11. So it's really a concern for Namibia. So now, as you said, this is actually something that is not allowed, but it is something that is actually increasing in an alarming rate. So what are the effect, or maybe what are the things, what are the factors that are really contributing to why this is actually a pressing issue in Namibia today?
Okay, Mike, there are main issues that when I was doing the research, I found out that there are basically four of them. One is the breaking down of relationships. This can be romantic relationships, it can be parent-child relationship, it can be employer-employee relationship. The other one is fear of being prosecuted by the law. You see, because man is a provider,
yeah,
he wants to do everything possible,
yeah,
to provide to the family. And that can cause that man to be at the wrong place,
yeah,
with the wrong people, mm, at the wrong time, and get involved in the wrong activities.
Yeah.
So once he's arrested, then the law will take its course. So people fear,
mm-hmm,
to be prosecuted by the law.
Mm.
And then the other thing is, a person might have committed a shameful act.
Yeah.
Which is a shameful act or perceived as a shameful act.
Mm.
How do a person face the society?
Yeah.
Before independence, a person will go to in exile.
Yeah.
There was an outlet. You can go to Angola, you can go and really fight for the liberation. And yeah, hoping that
even if you committed a sinful act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are saved by going outside.
Yeah.
Now people are retained. Exile is not there anymore. So there's no more an outlet.
Yeah.
So the outlet becomes one of this one.
Mm.
Yeah. The other one is people hearing commanding inner voice telling them to commit suicide.
Yeah.
And people have different interpretations. Some can say witchcraft, others can say no, schizophrenia or medical issues.
Yeah.
But these are the issues. But when you try to broaden it,
mm,
it goes like also like men as a provider is faced by economic,
mm,
and job setbacks,
yeah,
retrenchment and so on. And then there is terminal illness as well. You know, women who go to the hospital for checkup,
mm,
men will not, men are supposed to be strong.
Mm.
So he will not easily go for medical checkup.
Yeah.
He's sick, but he pretends he's strong. And then he will only go when it is too late. And once he gets the results, he's not able to cope,
yeah,
psychologically. So he lacks the capacity to bounce back, and then he thinks only of committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there are also, then the person can get involved in alcohol, substance abuse, with the purpose to reduce the stress.
Yeah.
And then you become an alcoholic or you get into trouble with the drugs and with the law and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So then you are entering into illegal business of corruption and then you are arrested.
Yeah.
So there are many factors.
Mm.
Yeah. But when you look generally, they are only actually those four.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go a little bit deeper into these four. Like at the beginning, you mentioned the breaking down of relationship. What do you think actually lead to this breakdown of relationship? It's also, one can say, it's a moral breakdown. And what really leads to the point now that this has become one of the factors that actually causing people actually to commit suicide.
Yeah, from my point of view, the way people have been entering relationships.
Yeah,
it was kind of a community oriented.
Mm.
So families were always involved. When we say two people want to get married, for example.
Yeah.
There was a period of courtship, there was a period of engagement, there was a period of family discussing. The parents were involved in the marriage of their children.
Yeah.
Because they felt responsible for that. Because when you are going to get married, it's like a small box, but in this small box, it's not only you two who are in there.
Yeah.
The family of each spouse is in that box.
Yeah.
So the families were involved to try to make sure that we have a proper selection and your marriage will be successful. So there was a community involvement. Now, development has come and people are exposed and they meet different institutions, they fall in love, and without consulting the parents, things are already far. And you may find out that the men begin to spend, begin to invest already in the future wife, but it's not yet known.
Nobody knows her in the family.
Yeah. Nobody knows her in the family. But the men might be known at the girl's house, but the other one's not known. The boy might not be known also at the other side.
Exactly.
And the girl might not be known on the other side. But now they are living together like this husband and wife. And when things get sour, You're finding the single money, you've invested money, cell phone, bed, TV, double bed, cell phone, and all these type of things. And when things fall apart, he does not know where to turn to. Because he does not know where to turn to, because this was illegal occupation. this was a cohabitation. So what happened? That's when passion killing comes in. So what we need to do, we need to sit down and reconstitute ourselves. Democracy is there, rights are there, but we should still move a little bit. We should not exclude our cultural practice that are good to keep our marriage moving forward. And then the type of family we had, it's no more the type of family we are having now. So we had the mother and father together in the same house. Now we've got a single-handed family. How do we support now also the single parents? The whole, there is a clash between traditional values and modern values. So whatever holds the family together, the relation together, is almost formatted. And we need to reconstitute ourselves. We need to find ways. We cannot hold development. We cannot stop development. But we have to see what can we take from our culture, which are in agreement with their development, so that we don't lose ourselves in the process.
So that means also the home that we are creating has also impact, has also effect on the kind of people that we are producing, the kind of character that we are producing in the society.
Exactly. Because before you are formed by looking at your father and by looking at your mom. And women is brought up by the mother and the boys are brought up by the father. And people talk. You know, that is all lost now.
So while we are there, there is this when people also attribute things like, okay, when we grew up in an African culture, there are things that are said to a boy, to a boy child, that be strong, be a man, you know. So, and this normally contribute to men not wanting to speak about their emotions. So what do you think about that?
That's expected of a man by any culture. That is now really kind of, you are now born into it, and it is passed on to you. But men do not just cry. Men must be strong. But then we built up a lot of emotions. Inside, and that's why men were able to hit. You know, when you make him angry, he hits back, because anger is possibly too much in him.
Yeah.
But the other thing is also, man has got a pride inside himself. Yeah. A man has got an inborn pride.
Yeah.
Inside himself.
And that's actually brought when you are growing up, you are called by that's a son of so and so, and that normally create that kind of pride, and you want to show strength in the way you either behave or in the way how you relate to people, isn't it?
So you put up a shield to protect yourself.
Yeah.
And to open up is a little bit for a man, it's a little bit risky because I'm laying my heart bare to another person.
Mm.
And if I do that, there are only two possibilities.
Yeah.
Either you reject me or you accept me.
Yeah.
If you accept me, there's no problem.
Mm.
But if you reject me, what else do I have?
Yeah.
How will you look at me? How will other people think about me? So men would like to keep this pride within himself because it is kind of a self-defense mechanism to survive in society.
Mm.
Men also want to be in control of everything.
Mm.
He wants to take the place of advantage. Mm. Now, when you say he must go for counseling, then he feels he's not in charge. he feels he's disempowered.
Yeah.
He wants to control. Now somebody else must control, must ask questions.
Mm.
And men would prefer not to go there.
Yeah.
The other thing is also, you know, when because men are taught to be strong, going for counseling is like, you are weak.
Yeah.
You know, you are weak. But you are not weak. You are simply there to look for help.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing, Mike, is this. Why men don't want to go for counseling also is many men feel they do not have resource centers for them.
Yeah. Mm.
As men. You know, take for example a man who is beaten by his wife at home, which is not a good thing, and he goes to the Ministry of Gender or the police and reports the case, and then he's being laughed at, made a laughing stock. The man comes back angry and he beats his wife. The wife runs to the police, report the man, and the police comes and arrests the man. You see, men are saying, where do we go? So they just feel that there are not really senders which are meant for them.
Mm.
So these are some of the issues why men are pretty reluctant.
Yeah.
But the answer to go for counseling lies in the men themselves.
Mm.
We should talk to the men themselves. It's about to change the mindset that is culturally inserted into a person. So the mindset needs to change. But in order for the men to change the mindset, you should convince him that to change from here, he must change to a better side. Now, unless he's convinced of that side, so you know he's not going to easily change. So it's a lifelong process. And we could make use of men who have made a paradigm shift of their mindset to talk to the others. And men who are good examples in society, we can make use of those ones to talk to the others so that fear out of men will come out. I would say that is possibly the way to go. And for a man to speak to his best friend, or to an elder man, or to a person who is respected in society, or to a pastor or so.
Yeah. So you mentioned something like that a man love wants to be in control. When it comes, and you also mentioned kucha or punya oma potungia kucha ihaisi ngonzinzi, you know. Now, so does that also comes to when a man decided to end their life? They wanna be in control, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
For a man, Mike, men want to die like a man.
Yeah.
A man does not want to die like a power. No.
Mm.
He wants to die like men. And sometimes men, the death is related to the profession as well.
Yeah.
Okay, a person from the security sector, let me say a soldier, a police, want to die like a policeman.
Yeah.
A soldier want to die like a soldier man. So they make use of lethal methods that are available with them.
Yeah.
So a man, if he's a soldier want to die like a soldier. By using the gun.
Yeah.
Women, they want to die like women.
Mm.
Less lethal methods, like overdosing and so on. And that makes them likely to be saved, because when you overdose, you fall into a coma.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can be easily taken to the hospital and in health, and then you arrive at it. Men will choose those lethal methods, which makes it very dangerous for him to be rescued, because he has decided.
Mm.
You know, there was a case I know. A man wanted to kill himself.
Yeah.
So he climbed on the tree. He put the rope in his neck.
Yeah.
He took a pistol and he shot himself to make sure that if the pistol misses, he is in the rope. So at the end of the day, he was hanging there, and he was having a pistol in his hand.
So just to make sure that there is no mistake, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So you also mentioned that the other factor is actually a fear of being persecuted by the law. Can we go a little bit deeper into that?
You know, the country has got laws, and as I said, men wants to be a provider of the family, and will make all type of opportunities to get something.
Yeah.
And they may be tempted by their friends to get into illegal hunting or something like that. And then the person is arrested. And you know, it's not good to be known that they've been arrested and to be in prison, because in a prison there is a lot of things. Now when he goes there and experiences whatever is being experienced, and we get, we say, bail. So we don't like to go back.
Yeah.
So what does he do? He will kill himself. Or he committed a crime and the police is looking for him.
Yeah.
So he is not definitely going to go to prison. What does he do? He rather go and hang himself.
Mm.
Or he kills himself. He can disappear, but the law has got a long arm.
Mm.
It will always find you. So people fear to be persecuted by the law and be put in prison. Because once you are put in prison, your life is almost like ended. And you get a criminal record and so on. You can be rehabilitated there, but once you've been in prison, then you have, that is a kind of stigma that follows you.
Yeah, that would follow you.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you go in prison once, there is always a second chance. So people fear to be prosecuted to face the law.
Mm.
Instead of facing the law and be found guilty, he prefers to die and he will kill himself.
Yeah. So that means that it could be, when we're looking at now in a broader context, it means that many men might have actually involved in some of the activity, either in their work, either in society, generally in society, like rape or having actually violated somebody. And because they don't want to face the law, then they would actually end their life. And in most cases, in the life of the other person is as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is what happened.
Mm.
Yeah.
And normally that's why we hear so many, you know, people also killed by on the hands of men, it because that could be the case where, no, I have done this and I'm not going to face the law. I'd rather kill you and kill myself as well. So,
yeah.
Mm. All right.
You are correct. Mm. But as a director of the Droga Counseling Association, having done a lot of training on suicide awareness and prevention and intervention, post-prevention and the continuum care, the response from men has been positive.
Mm.
Men have come forward and participated in the workshops.
Yeah.
And they really share what is going on.
Mm.
And men have responded by coming forward to seek counseling.
Yeah.
Especially when it is conducted by a man, yeah, or by a pastor or by a priest.
Yeah.
Yeah, men have come forward seeking counseling. And they become part and parcel of the groups that reach out to other men as well.
Mm.
And therefore, some have changed their mindset.
Mm.
And they are instrumental in this. This one I can see, I can tell from the local counseling association.
Yeah.
It depends how do you approach men, how do you talk to him? Men want a space, men want to be respected,
yeah.
Men want to be understood. Men, they do cry.
Mm.
They do cry when they commit suicide. That is a cry for help, but we don't understand the language of men.
Yeah.
Yes. So men are good people. We just need to approach them in the human way and in an understanding way. From the Droga Counseling Association, they are participating, they are seeking counseling, they are giving suggestions,
yeah,
they are reaching out to others.
Mm.
And we should make use of these men to reach out to other men. They say, if you want to catch a thief, you must put up a thief.
Yeah.
To catch another one.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So now the other factor that you actually mentioned, it's very, very, very common. It's something that you hear quite often, and I have been doing counseling as well. And this is something that come up quite often. The inner voice commanding, you know, someone to do, to commit, to end their life. You mentioned that. Is that something really common? Do you find that very common? And where does it come from?
Yeah, that is very common in the country.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of counseling I've met people from all 14 regions of the country. And I've met people who have approached with such problems.
Yeah.
you yourself, other people around, they do not hear. But he is said, he or she is hearing this voice.
Yeah.
And sometimes they say, this voice is from somebody who they know.
Mm.
Sometimes they say, somebody who died. Some people say, the voice are coming from us.
Yeah.
But they say, this voice is persistent in the person. And it's telling you, for example, take the rope. And you take the rope to go and get. So it's something which is not easily be pushed away by that person.
Yeah.
So the best way is to listen to the person and to try to find out, is this person maybe taking medicine?
Yeah.
And then they've stopped. Does this person have some kind of hallucination?
Mm.
Or is this something hereditary? But the best person is to listen to the person, what the person is saying,
yeah.
So that the person feels relieved, and then you refer the person basically to the hospital.
Yeah.
Now, when you refer the person to the hospital, they think that you are referring them to ward 16.
Mm.
Yeah, because I am
Jehovah.
Yeah. But you don't go there straight away. Usually, when you are referred to the hospital, you just go and get to the medical doctor.
Yeah.
And the medical doctor will listen to you, will refer you to the social worker who is there in the hospital.
Yeah.
To deal with the issue, to see the social issues around it. It's not that you'll be sent to ward 16.
Uh-uh. Mm.
So when the people fear about this. So if a person say, I'm hearing commanding this, you yourself, who is being taught, you will not see, you will not hear.
Yeah.
And the people around the family, they say they can also not hear. Only the person will hear this voice.
Mm.
And it is so persistent. And some people have obeyed this voice.
Yeah.
And they have committed suicide. So such a person needs to be referred to the clinic, or to the hospital for a better examination, so
yeah,
it's something which is there, and it's also linked to other things.
Mm.
You know, other people say, "I have for a while, so I cannot explain this, and I'm not explaining in those things."
Yeah,
yeah. So it depends. It's up to the public to judge when a person speaks to you about it. But my advice is, such a person is saying something like that, you should not waste time.
Yeah.
Because
that
voice is very persistent.
Yeah.
And person is likely to obey that.
Mm. And normally people who, when we put a blanket with a statement like that, like "ay oparo wa," you know, whatever the case, or being bewitched and so on, it means that what we're saying is that there's nothing that we can do. You understand? So
yes.
There is nothing that we can do. Just let him be, because there is nothing we can do. But we have to understand this is a person who actually probably going through some traumatic or stressful or distressful situation that with help, he can actually change. And that happened to many people, you know?
Well, yeah, no, there are a lot of people whom I have seen, whom I have referred, and they are alive.
Yeah.
And they are good people.
Yeah.
So a person simply needs to be listened to and to be referred to the right person to attend, and the person can recover.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So the other maybe aspect before I let you go, then in the end, the other aspect is the providers, okay? The counseling, the organization like Ondolokas, the social workers, the pastors, the priests, and whoever providing counselings. So what one thing is that those providers need to be trustworthy for people actually to be willing to talk to them, for people to be able to come to them. Maybe one of the reasons why men and many other people don't go for counseling is because they don't. See that these people are trustworthy or are good character for that to be able to be trusted with issues like this.
Right. Yeah. Different professionals, social workers, psychologists, and so on.
Yeah.
Especially the religious leaders. They've got a great role to play.
Yeah.
In the suicide awareness and prevention. Because of the position of trust where they are.
Yeah.
And let me talk more on the religious leaders.
Yeah.
The religious leaders, we do not have to go for extra mile. We have received a lot of trainings. So all what we need is to align the topic of suicide with our church programs.
Yeah.
By including the topic of suicide, for example, in our homilies, Sunday homilies and services, in classes of religious instruction like confirmation, compulsory communion, Bible studies, and in youth camps, women movements, whenever conference, whenever they come together like that.
Yeah,
and we should invite people who have got experience to come and offer training to our members, to youth leaders, to senior leaders, whoever stands in front of people needs to be trained so that we can attend to the needs of the attendees.
Yeah.
And then we also need to make ourselves available for counseling sessions. And the other thing is, we should be able to, as Christian pastors, we should be able to understand and accept that we've got limits.
Yeah.
We are not experts in everything. But in our parishes, in our communities, there are human resource persons. We can make use of.
Yeah.
Social workers are there. Psychologists are there, police are there, school counselors are there, youth counselors are there. So we should draw these people closer to us so that we can make use of these available resources without cost. All what we need to do is to call them. We create a space for them, and then they can come in at different times as volunteers. We should not be afraid. They are there to help us. The other thing is also, we must support families that have lost people through suicide. We should journey with them during the time of bereavement.
Yeah.
What are they going through? Because there will be anger, there will be guilty and blaming and so on. How do we help them?
And normally that may lead also, because of what they are going through, that may lead also another member in that family to commit suicide as well. Yeah.
Yes, because suicide is contagious. When the family is not properly counseled, it runs into families.
Yeah.
And the best way is to establish self-help group of suicide survivors, bring those families together to share and talk, and we can make use of them as resources to put up awareness and prevention programs.
Yeah.
And even maybe those who have attempted suicide and survived, those ones, they can speak the language better than us.
Yeah.
So, religious people, we have got quite a lot on our place.
Yeah.
And we can just simply align our programs with them. If you are invited by recollection like I'm invited.
Yeah.
Mm. And you've got something to go and contribute. Why not?
Yeah. Mm.
Yes.
All right. So, Father Venner, if you could send one message to Namibian men listening right now, who feel they have no other choice, what would you say?
Yeah, might just give me 2 minutes to say something before I come to that one.
Yeah.
For a minute.
Okay.
I want to tell my fellow citizens in Namibia that many researchers on suicide have been conducted.
Yeah.
We know who I was. We know the signs of suicide. We know the methods that have been used.
Yeah.
Workshops have been conducted. I have attended the workshops conducted by the Ministry of Health and Social Services.
Yeah.
One is Safari Hotel and one is Protea Hotel. The one is Protea Hotel, we had 200 social workers all over the country. And we put up a strategy, out of national strategy. Many things have been done. It is time that we look at those suggestions and recommendations and implement them. Namibia will make laws that we are a little bit weak in implementing. It's time to look at those resolutions and then we try to implement them.
Yeah.
In Namibia, there are four sectors that can change the face of the rate of suicide in Namibia. It's the government, it's the church, the traditional authorities and the civil society.
Yeah.
Minister of Health, Minister of Gender, NAMPO, and then the church, each church can come up with strategies how to prevent suicide. And we put our efforts together as churches.
Mm.
The traditional authorities is to keep the traditional values, the concept, the interconnectedness, the interdependence, the togetherness, this value that is lost. So the traditional values can also come from that, what kept the society together. Certain things have fallen apart. The government brings it back, the church brings it back, the traditional world brings it back, the social sector brings it back. Once these four sectors come together, we can reconstitute the country. And then we determined, we look at where we come from, where are we now, and where do we want to go as a nation, as a suicide-free nation.
Yeah.
It is not this nation. These are the four sectors that are represented. The government is our government. People go to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
Traditional authorities are powerful people in their area of responsibility. The social sectors like the media, you are setting the agenda of the day. So if this sector can come together and come up with a suicide prevention is a joint responsibility. Yeah. So the last one is to say men who commit suicide do not really need a profession.
Yeah.
At the first instance, no. Men just need somebody who understands them, who listens to them, and hear their cry. And this person wants to listen to them are the people, first of all, the family members, the friends, the wife and the children and the employees. And this person who is supposed to give attention to men to keep him alive is you and me. So let us keep our brothers and sisters. They don't want to die.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to die.
Exactly.
No, people kill themselves because they've got a pain that has become unbearable. And they are unable to bounce back.
Yeah.
But once we attend to them, we listen to them, with the ear of the heart, they will change and they will continue to live.
Yeah.
I believe we can make Namibia a free, a suicide-free country.
Yeah.
If all of us, we can put together our efforts.
All right.
And God will bless Namibia.
Brother Venner, thank you very much for making time to talk to our listener this morning. And, well, we encourage everybody to look up for Londoloka, wherever you, especially those are in the north, even in Windhoek, or in, other part of the country. Look up for Londoloka Counseling Association, because there are volunteers that are helping, in those who having suicidal thought. Father, thank you again for coming through, and we wish you a very good day ahead.
Thank you, Mike. And the local is at your service.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. That was the Father Venner Afunde, Lieutenant Father Venner Afunde, Catholic pastor, Vicar General for the Archdiocese of Windhoek. And giving us really some insight why men are dying the silent death. All right. So you're most welcome to come through now. Our telephone number is 0833-66091. If you want to react to our discussions, our telephone number is 0833-66091. So let's have a musical break, and then we will be Shania Twain, Forever and For Always.
In your arms, I can still feel the way you want me when you hold me. I can still hear the words you whispered when you told me. I can stay right here forever in your arms. And there ain't no way I'm letting you go now. And there ain't no way. And there ain't no how. I'll never see that day. 'Cause I'm keeping you.
sounds there by Shania Twain. By Shania Twain, forever and for always. Our time is actually 15 minutes past the hour of 12. And hopefully you are listening. And I'm looking for your reaction. What is your reaction? What is your reaction to our discussion? So we're looking at the why men are dying a silent death. Why are they committing more suicide in comparison to our counterparts? So, and we really went into some issues that that are very, very, very interesting that Father Afunde has highlighted, breaking down of relationships or so, and it's not just about romantic relationships, or talking about a relationship in general and how that affect, you know, people and how do they react to that. So, and also we look at, he also mentioned about fear of being persecuted, by the law. And you can see that. And we really also went really, really deep into that. And you can see that sometimes, the intensity or the cruelty of the people who commit suicide, in the way that sometimes they kill themselves, they kill others, and they kill themselves, it's probably because they don't want to face they don't want to face the law, they don't want to face the shame, they don't want, so, and those kind of things really, and he went into really looking into that, giving examples of that, and also committed the other things, other factors that he mentioned is if someone have committed a shameful act. So a shameful act, well, someone have raped somebody, someone have done something that is not, that's not acceptable in that community. That can also, can be also a factor. And we talked about, there's other things, social factors, you know, economic factors, and he embedded all that into, some of this. So when you lose your job, for example, you, it has nothing to do with you, but you feel you no longer, when it comes to men, you are no longer a provider. You're no longer, someone that people look it up and you look shameful and all that. So, and these are some of the things that lead. Nobody seemed to, people used to come to you, ask you things, you know, it's always good, even if you don't give, when people come to you, that people see that people respect you, and now people don't care, don't even ask advice, don't even consider you in discussions and things like that. So that, all that actually contribute, to those societal thought. And, inner voice, we also talked about inner voice commanding you to either take your own life in different ways. So he went into that as well, and also talk about terminal illness. Someone may be diagnosed with that, and he can't cope with that. So forth. So we looked at quite a number of factors that are contributing factors to why so many men, a number of men, the suicide rate of men actually has gone up. And it's actually a crisis, especially when it comes to worldwide, it's a phenomenon in the world, but, it's quite higher in Namibia as well. So now, what I want to do, and this is normally what, what I do here. So Father Werner gave us really, really, really quite deep insight in that area. So what I want to do now, I want to go through with you into I want to tackle the issue, because I deal with the mind. So I want to tackle the issues of what goes through the person's mind when they have suicidal thought, or even survive an attempt, because that you could be someone who actually having entertaining this thought, or you could be someone who have actually survived the suicide attempt. So, and these are hard experience. These are hard experience, but the whole question here, but understanding them can bring light into the darkness, really. So the reasons why I've tried to do this, and normally this is what I do, try to understand what is the process in your head, what is your process in your mind, and when you understand that process, you can be able to say, "Aha, this is exactly what I'm doing now," you know, and you can be able then to change that. So, and modern research make it clear. They make it clear that suicidal thought usually don't come out of nowhere. So you just don't wake up one day and then, well, you have suicidal thought. No, they often come from overwhelming pain. Remember that. So just because, you know, you might have developed a coping mechanism for you to deal with some of this overwhelming pain. Some people haven't, you know. There are just some pain that might be just too much for this person, according to them. Yeah. For you may be looking at it and think, why would somebody actually, you know, so depressed about that? So, as I said, they often come from overwhelming pain. Understand that. So whenever someone actually is thinking about, you know, ending their own life, it's because they're in some kind of an immeasurable pain, emotional pain, you know, so that you probably don't understand. So now this emotional pain, overwhelming pain, it might come from depression. It might come from a trauma. It might come from a loss. It might come from a feeling completely trapped, you know. This person feel that they are trapped and there's no way to get out. So, and for example, clinical studies show that someone with depression, okay, if someone is someone with depression is about 20 times, so that it is about 20 times more likely to die by suicide, 20 times more likely to die by suicide than someone without a mood disorders. So, and this tells us how powerful and distorting depressions and other illness can really be. So now what I want us to look is the experience also teaches what is this pain can feel like. You have felt it, probably I have felt it, so she have and him. So the experience, what does it teach us about pain, you know, and what that pain feel like. So what are the experience this person is actually going through, and what does it teach us? This is where now I want you to understand basically what we're talking about, what this person is going through. So the experience, and I said you probably have experience, you're probably going through this yourself right now, or you know someone who have gone through this, who have experienced this. So one, some of the experience of one of the, I don't want to say the top one. So this up, and I have talked to people, I've talked to clients, I have 25 years of counseling now. So hopelessness and entrapment, you know, many people describe a feeling of no way out. So we're talking of somebody who wants to end their life. So they kind of like the sense of hopelessness, and they are being trapped, kind of like they feel they are trapped and there is no way out. You probably have that feeling. Sometimes now think about that. You might have that feeling that there is no way out, and where you are now. So you are happy, vibrant, dynamic, you know, living life. So, but you had those feelings. And I want to tell the people that have the same feeling right now that also can pass. So this kind of feeling, no way out, is as if their life is enclosed by darkness. I want you now to listen. When people are going through this, don't downplay it. So, and those, the thought of suicide may begin as a vivid daybreak, just a daydreams. You know, just they're vivid like a daydreams or image that momentarily soothe the hurt. You understand? When you, something that you know, you're thinking of this to actually soothe what you're going through. You know? And by sooner they become intrusive. They become intrusive and all consuming. This is all what you're thinking. Eh? So it was something just that just comes involuntary, momentary, not involuntary, momentary. Eh? And that was just actually to kind of soothe your hurt that you're going through, you know. And sometimes you can just, do you remember some saying, many of us, when we were young or something like, you probably mentioned, you know, you feel like something, maybe your parents or whoever, your guardian, and you said, well, it would be better if I'm dead or something like that. You know, that thought, it kind of give you that, as I said, it takes away, it soothes that hurt. You know, if I'm dead, then these people probably would, you know, they won't feel the way that they feel. You see, and then that's actually within you, that actually soothes that hurt. All right? And then soon that becomes actually something that is actually consuming you all the time. It's like a movie on loop in the mind that won't stop. Eh? So one of the survivors said, I know one of the survivors I talked to, said it felt like the brain was urging them on. You understand? Because they are urging them on, but there's still a small part of you that want to live. As Father said, as Father Afunde mentioned, that nobody wants to die. Eh? So the whole here is that, you know, you want to stop the pain, that overwhelming pain that the person is going through. And the only thing that they do, the only way out. So as I said, hopefully, the person feel hopeless and trapped. The only way out is things that end in your own life. So there's always that light. In many things, nobody wants to die. There's always that small part of them still wanted to live. And that's why they're still here. They still haven't done it. They're still part of them, but it's a very small part. Eh? So now the other feeling, the other experience is the feeling of a burden. You know, a common theme is guilt or believing everyone would be better off without me. You understand? And I remember a man shared to me that he said, I thought my family would be better off without me. He thought. So suicide, and he said, suicide actually felt like the only way out, as I said. Eh? So that kind of like where the person, you know, you come to tell yourself, I'm actually the burden to these people. And the only way everyone will be better off, it's for me to, you know, to just go. And that can become intrusive. That can become all consuming. Eh? Your mind now is just focused on this. Just focus on this. It just actually strengthens that thought, eh? That you are a burden, that you are a burden, that you are a burden, until you start to believe it. So, and this thought can be painfully convincing. That can be really painful convincing. And as I said, nobody wants to die. And for someone to come to that point where they end their life can be painfully convincing and making someone feel, as Father said, the other thing that he mentioned, it's a committed something that make them committed of a shameful act. So these things can make someone feel shame and worthlessness. So you feel that you feel shameful, you feel worthlessness, that kind of feeling, and it can be very, very, very convincing. And I can tell you that will also pass. So, and one of the other experience, what are they going through? That's what I want you to understand. As I said, when you understand, you know how to relate to someone who's going through this. You know how to relate to yourself. You would actually know how to relate to yourself. Isolation and loneliness, that's another thing. Trauma, abuse, loss, you could be loss of someone. These trauma, loss, abuse, and all those can deepen these feelings as well. They can deepen this, the feeling of wanting to end your life. And the WHO, the World Health Organization notes that experience like violence, abuse or social isolations, raises the risk of social of societal behavior. You know, they raises that risk of social, societal behavior. So, and in Namibia, for instance, long-term stresses like unemployment, for example, you know, or the grief of losing a loved one, that can push people. Sometimes that can push people actually towards despair. They become so despair and they feel alone. They feel alone. I was just given someone who might lost his job and nobody else now, talk to him or come for him for advice or, you know, they feel isolated. They feel lonely because most of us, we are just needed because of, of what you offer. In most cases, is what you offer that you become more, that people become one, not one, that you are needed. So that's what I want to say. So isolation and loneliness, is one of the experiences as well that people who have suicidal thought, that they go through. And it could be you. It could be you. So there's also something called a cognitive distortion. Now, in crisis, thinking often becomes tunnel vision. You hear tunnel vision. Rational alternatives seem invisible, you know. The word thinking of otherwise, it seems invisible, you know. You only now see this because of that distortion. So people report like all or nothing kind of thinking, you know. It's all or nothing. So, for example, believing that either everything must be perfect or life isn't worth living. You understand? That kind of all or nothing kind of thinking. So now this distorted thinking, it does block hope. You understand? So it does block hope, and research describes suicidal idea as an intrusive thought. You know, those are intrusive thoughts. Your mind keep returning to them, tearing your way from other possibilities. It distorted, this distorted thinking, it block hope. You don't see anything else. It's all or nothing. And now you see nothing. So that's also what experience that people have suicidal thought that they experience as well. So we can also talk about gender and cultural pressure, which also Father Afunde talked about. So in many societies, men are taught to hide pain. We talked about that. So this is terribly dangerous. As I said earlier at the beginning, I said, you know, this is said, sometimes this is said, it's not that the intention of people who said be a man, be strong and all that is actually for you to, it says it's hide, it doesn't really recognize that you, as a consequence of that, is actually saying don't express your emotions. So as a consequence, you know, by telling you be a man, be strong, it's looking at where in the environment that you are. So some of us, we grew up in the area, in the environment where you have to fight, you know, where you have to, you know, to dominate, to be recognized, you know, even that's also a perception from a woman, for a woman to want you should be dominating. You should be, you know, somebody that is outstanding, and you can't be outstanding if you are this, you know, behind everybody. So you understand, it's for you to work hard, to, you have to be strong, you got to be, you know, if you started, no, I feel these, you're not going to go anywhere. So it's coming from that background where you are pushed to succeed, you know, and if you focus too much on, I can't do this because I feel this way, and you know, you never get anywhere. It's coming from a good place, if I want to say, but it has also a side effect. I like to say it has also a side effect. It's like you're getting you have a headache, but you get a medicine that actually treat a headache, but it might make you nausea. You understand? It has a side effect. So the side effect is then that, you know, many men often bottled up their feelings, and tragically, you know, men make up close to about 80% of suicide death in the country. Because sometimes as a consequence of what we have been told, and we don't know how to process that, that emotions, so that we relieve those emotions. And in most cases, they are bottled up in the way they are relieved. Because now think of someone actually stabbing someone 51 times. Stabbing, you know, one, two, or three, up to 50 something. What is going on in that person? So, there is a lot that's going on. Sometimes it's years of, sometimes it's actually not stabbing. He is not even stabbing that person. He's actually stabbing maybe, you know, he could have been brought up in a stepmother, for example, where he'd been treated. I know someone, that the reason why I'm talking about that. Someone who's brought up by stepmothers who have actually killed somebody, you know, so he's in jail now. So brought up by stepmother, and he was treated so badly, you know, so badly. And these emotions, how he was so treated so badly when we were so young, it starts bottled up. Never really allowed to express those feelings, and then it came out in just rushing out and killing somebody who cruelty, very cruel in a way. So it's because now it's not even the person that the person killed is not the one that actually he has been, you know, he was killing. He was actually killing her stepmother, but actually killing somebody, killing a girlfriend. So you understand. So that double-edged sword. Yeah. So it came from a good place when this is what. But now we have to say, look, we need to look at this. All these factors, when we're talking about hopelessness, feeling trapped, believing you are a burden, or relentless negative thought. So when all this combined, they create a storm in your mind. They really create a storm in your mind, and it may feel like the pain will never end. Yeah. But remember, and this is what I want to say to you, remember those thoughts, as real and frightening sometimes as they are, come from a distorted place. It comes from a distorted place of intense suffering. You understand? So, and they are symptoms of a treatable crisis. They are symptoms. Remember that. They are symptoms of a treatable crisis. And they are not really truth about you. They are not anything about you. It's just a symptom of something that you are going through. So, all right. Now, what if someone, we're talking about now the experience that people go through. Now, what if someone, let's also look, what if someone actually tries to take their life? Surviving a suicide attempt is an extremely intense experience as well. So it could be both physically and psychologically. So immediate afterwards, people often feel a suite of emotions. You really go through a lot of emotions, and I have counseled. I have seen people who have gone through this. So sometimes it's a shock and confusion. You know, many survivors say they feel stunned to still be alive. You know, now that the person is in a safe place, like a hospital or home, they might think, you know, how did I end up here? What just happened? So this confusion is normal. If you are going through that, it's normal. It's like waking up from a nightmare and try to catch your breath, you know? So sometimes you feel that way. So it's just like, what happened? You know? So some people feel relief, and that could be for a second, because of a second chance, you know. Surprisingly, you have some survivors that report a sense of relief. So sometimes you have to experience that intense kind of experience, that intense experience for you to realize, how painful that is. So they realize, even if only for a brief period of time sometimes, because sometimes people later on also try again. So, and that sometimes just give them that sense that they want to live. They want to live. This can open up. This is where we need to work with the person. This is that can open the door to hope. You understand? Where now they see this is a second chance for me. So, and there is a quote that says, "Your journey of healing is one that many have been on and survived, and your life matters." So that means there have been many people on that journey, and they survived. So, people have faced this darkness and found a way back. You can as well, if you are in that situation now. So you can as well. So the other, you know, for the people who have been trying, as I said, who survived suicide attempt, so they could feel guilty. And also embarrassed, you know, you could be very embarrassed. So either feel guilty or about the attempt or embarrassed about the attempt. Also worrying about how family and friends would react. You understand? It becomes a stigma. So it's kind of like a tag, you know, put on you. You feel like you have a tag now. I've been trying. Because remember what Father was saying. So this is something that is not accepted in the in the community. It's not something that is accepted in a society. So, and therefore, it can become that when you survive an attempt, suicide attempt, it becomes a stigma. You can self-stigmatize yourself. That wherever you go, you know, people are looking at you now differently. Look at this one who was trying to kill himself or tried to kill herself. And that stigma you can carry that for quite a long time if you don't get help. So it is very important that also, you know, you get help. You really see somebody professional to get help, because you could stigmatize yourself. So it's also where the loved ones don't know what to say. They might also frightened or unsure. You find people who they find themselves in situations where they're unsure. They don't know what to say. And remember, and I want you to remember that their feelings are not your responsibility. So their feelings are not your responsibility. They care about you. Even if they are confused, they do care about you. And you don't have to carry guilt for something you can't control right now. At this point in time, this is not something that you can control, and you don't need to feel guilt about, you know, about that. And as I said, their feelings are not your responsibility. So you, what you're going through is something that you are in control of. Okay? So, and the other thing is also, sometime, and interestingly, some people, and I met someone who actually have got a new perspective, have actually attempted committing suicide and survived. And then for this person, see that as a new, when now, later on, and I was actually, you know, talk to him after some times, maybe after 2 weeks after that. So sometimes many people who have survived an attempt later see life differently. Because of the love, the support that they get, survivors often begin to view their problem in a new light. And this is also then important, that if you have someone who have survived from an attempt, we need to show them love, we need to show them care, all that, because then that's how they now see, yeah, that there are people who care. I have people who have been supporting me, so it's just that maybe I haven't given them opportunity. Because if they tried and nobody seemed, now they're blaming you. What were you trying to do? Yeah. And then sometimes people focus on them. You could be a parent and you kind of thinking, what do you think people would say? Yeah. And you worried about your image. You continue now worried about your image rather than actually the person who were trying to commit, who were trying to end his life. So that's where they said, well, these people don't care. You know? They don't care, and they will definitely do that again. So for now, when we do that, they realize that help is out there. So they have been given a second chance. They have been given another chance. It's a moment of clarity now. Things that once seems unbearable start to feel manageable, and with the support, as I said, with the support. So, in short, when we're looking at after an attempt, the mind can feel really chaotic. The mind can feel chaotic. One moment you are glad to be alive, and the next you might feel ashamed. But that mix of feelings, that mix of feeling alive and broken in, it's a powerful place to stand. It's really a powerful place to stand because it means part of you still want to live. Part of you still want life. Eh? And that's the part that can grow stronger. That's the part that we want to grow stronger. That the light, that's light. That's the light that we want to, you know, to set light. That's the light that we want to help, to support. All right? So, yeah, let's have a quick commercial. I mean, not commercial. Have a quick musical break, just to break up, you know, me talking all the way. And then we come back and probably conclude our discussion. So you're most welcome to come through. We have about 10 minutes before we come to the end of our show. What are you saying? What is your take of what we have been discussing so far? Our telephone number is 08-333-66-091. 08-333-66-091. As I said, I want to go old today, classic. What are those? Okay, let me go for, yeah, Don Williams, A Gypsy Woman.
Silver coins that jingle jangle, fancy shoes that dance in time, all the secrets of her dark eyes, they did sing a gypsy rhyme. Yellow clover, entangled blossoms in a meadow silky green, where she held me to her bosom, just a boy of 17. I recall a gypsy woman, silver spangles in her eyes, ivory skin against the moonlight. And
Mind Matter, good morning, welcome to Eagle FM. This is Mind Matter.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Speaking to Isaac. I'm enjoying the discussion around this.
Yeah. What is your take?
Yes, what you have said are really valid points. In most cases, as a man, we are not given an ear where our matters are listened to.
Yeah.
Yes,
there was something, I'm just getting to a point that you're making. He said, there, if you're listening to Father Vene, where he said, men don't really need professionals. They need someone who understand, you know, who understand them. You know, and this is something that makes me think, yes, in any case, we need someone who understands us, isn't it?
Yes. And that's where we are neglected when we speak. Nobody pays attention and we end up doing something out of life. Yes. The other issues is around, say there was someone that attempted or survived.
Yeah.
It really becomes difficult for one to talk to them.
Yeah.
For example, let's say they do something wrong again, you want to reprimand them. You want to correct them.
Yeah.
So that I find that one very difficult, because should you say something, you feel like maybe I might persuade this person to do the act that they did before. So you might be left with no choice but to keep quiet while they keep doing something that is also not right sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know now, from a professional, how does one handle that type of situation?
The problem comes that you haven't listened, you know. First of all, your reaction, it comes from anger. It's coming from an anger where you believe that the person was actually trying to do something wrong. You understand? And you want to reprimand them. But you have no idea why they were trying to do that. So, and one thing, and I said earlier on, that any person who want actually to commit suicide, it's coming from immense pain that they are going through. So this is not something someone who just wake up and said, well, it's fun to really end my life. They are going through immense pain. And sometime it might not be, you think maybe you are a father. I provide them. They have food to eat. You know, they have a better life here. You know, everything is here. What would be the problem? You understand?
Yeah, question.
Yeah, what would be the problem? And you kind of like, I'm doing, now you focus on yourself. I'm doing all my best, you know, to give them a better life. And then they are trying to do this. You see, now the focus is no longer the other person. Now it's you. You know, it's you. So, and this is what we need to guard against. So what the most important things that we need to do, first, listen. And sometime, listening is, it has nothing just to sit the person and said, sit and then talk. No, it has to do by understanding the people that are around us. Because some of the signs, you can see them all the time, you know. You can see them all the time. The child maybe, you know, started, they used to do certain things, but they don't do that anymore. You know, there's always a change. And you never picked it up, you know. And sometimes it's nothing to do with people here. Maybe the person is being bullied at school, you know. And as a boy, he doesn't want to tell you that, you know, I'm being actually bullied I feel like I'm a coward or something like that. So, and that actually, and that can actually put them in that position where they don't feel that daddy doesn't understand, my mother doesn't, my parent don't understand, you know. And one thing that we have also to understand, and this is something I have seen, a boy, a teenager around 17, 18, actually around 19, 20, who have been actually recruited in this kind of way, where now he was recruited in some kind of a, I would say some kind of a cult. So where he didn't know, and then he found himself actually doing certain things that he didn't want to do. So it's a shameful thing, like the father I was speaking to, he said, sometimes people have done a shameful act and they don't know how to face that. So you think, what is wrong with this person? But there could be something that has nothing to do with you here in the home, but it has to do something else, you know? Yeah. And if we open up to listen, because our young children at this point in time, there's a lot that they are going through than what we went through. I don't know how old you are, than what we went through when we were growing up. So they were not internet. They were not, I'm that coming from that time where there was no internet. So this person, this child things can be said to her just on sitting in her room. You know, there are other people telling you are a bitch, you are you understand? And that, they don't know how to handle.
Before we wrap up, I just want to say something that I heard from one a fellow man. He was a taxi driver, and then he had been dating a student.
Yeah.
In Windhoek. Upon finishing, this student started dating a fellow teacher.
Yeah. So when now she finished, left the taxi driver.
Right. Then she told the taxi driver that they need to end it.
Yeah.
And this taxi driver, upon doing his own investigation, he found out that the lady was dating a colleague at work.
Yeah.
So he decided to invite the lady for the final weekend, because they are now no longer going to be together. Now, in his mind was, after that weekend, the lady will come on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The Sunday was going to kill her. And then kill himself.
Yeah.
That's what he planned. And then he called the woman. So since they've been together for quite some time, this woman came innocent, not knowing that there's another agenda from the man. was came on the Friday, and then the Sunday morning, when he was supposed to murder her, he said that something came into him that, why should I die? Should I go commit suicide? Useless person.
You bring the peanut butter just
so he just got angry. He actually took out a lot of bangers, he said, 750
millimeters of right brand sunflower oil,
and then he went in the bedroom.
You say your low budget grocery store with good food and leave costs less.
His place.
Yeah.
Before he changed his mind.
Mm.
So it was strange from the girl. She asked him what was going on. She said, just dress and leave my place.
Yeah. Mm.
For good.
Yeah.
And then the lady also complied. She left.
Yeah.
And he was confessing to me in a taxi. He's a taxi driver.
Mm.
That my brother, this is what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But up to now, I've not healed.
Mm, yeah.
He does not want to get in any relationship anymore.
You see? Yeah. So, go on. Mm.
Yeah. So I see some of these things. Yeah, this is a relationship problem.
Yeah.
That can also cause, because someone might have decided that I'm done with life. This is the lady that I have for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, later on, that person changes their mind instantly. While you had longer visions with that specific person.
Yeah, yeah. The point you're making is very. It's common in our country. And you know the reasons why I focus on the process in our mind is actually people to understand how they control their thinking. You understand? So the pain that this person is going through, it's real. I mean, I have spent my money, you know, trying to maybe support her to study. And then at the end of that, now she wants to leave me, you know. So the process in your mind now is that I spent all this money. I wasted my time. I could have built this. You see that? You're building up that reality within yourself to be able to react in the way you want to react. So, and that's why sometimes I emphasize on the process in your mind, how you are thinking. And then notice that this is something I'm creating in my mind to create a reasons to be able to do. You might be right. I mean, what you're saying is right to say, look, I spend all this money. I could have done something else and what. But, you know, and that would then lead you to behave in a certain way. So, but then, like what he did, that he recognized, why did I have to go actually to do this and end up in jail or whatever because of someone for some, you see, that's a mindset. Just that mindset quickly actually changed his way of behaving.
Yes.
It's not something that is very difficult. It's just that we need to learn way that you have to think, is this something that's going to help me? Is this a kind of action, in this kind of way of thinking, would it going to help me? Sometimes some people don't get out of it. So they thought about this negative way and they continue actually, you know, thinking in that way until it becomes a reality in their head, you know, and they start to do what they're thinking.
And now, as a professional,
I
want advice from you now. The society expects men to do A, B, C, D.
Yeah.
And then they do this A, B, C, D with expectations.
Yeah.
And when things does not turn in their favor, that's when these problems comes in. Now, your advice to us as men.
Yeah.
Should we ignore the expectations that society is exerting on us?
Mm.
Or how?
Yeah, so this is could be a topic in itself that we can talk about, but there are certain things. So we live in the society to where we want to belong. You understand? We are a social being. In a community where we are, we want to belong, you know, to belong to a tradition, to belong to a family, to belong to, yeah. And sometimes we do certain things, even if things that are not in our own interest, just because we want them to belong. So this is something that then we have to recognize. You know, we need to recognize that there are certain things, even if it's in the interest of the community, it's actually not in the interest of me. You understand? So once we recognize that, and this is where I was saying, whatever you do, you have to ask, is this is for your well? Is this is for your, and you have to think for your own physical well, mental being, well-being. Is this really for my own well-being? And for the well-being of maybe my family and things like that. So if it's not, then it's not something that you need to engage in too. So most of the cases, we just respond in the way we have been taught. And there's nothing wrong like that. It's time now to look at certain beliefs that we believe in, that we have been taught by our culture, our church, our whatever the case may be, and re-look at that. Are they in the interest of our well-being? You know, some of them, they are not.
Yeah.
And also then understand that nobody is worth of you, worth of you dying for, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody of you worth of you going to prison, you understand. And you may have children. If you are in prison, you'll not be able to support them. You'll not be able to, you know, to do what you want to do. You understand? So I think it's a mindset that we need to change, and it's going to take time. It's not something that you just wake up and, you know, I am changed. You are what you know, what you have learned from childhood, you know, to where you are now. And that sometimes needs time to have a different perspective, a different mindset. To change. Yeah.
Thank you. I love the discussion. All right.
All right. Bye-bye. No, thank you for coming through. All right. All right. Basically, I think the queen, probably she's waiting with the red face. Mike, when are you going to finish? All right. Yeah. Thank you for joining me this morning. Thank you for listening. This is what we try to do, here, really to teach, really sensitize and awaken, you know, certain emotions that you may not have felt before. And also, you know, try to instill some questions that you need to ask, not only yourself, but others as well, for betterment of ourselves and of others and of our society. So today we discuss about why men are, so what is our top, what our topic was, that, you know, why men are dying, why Namibian men are dying in silence. We invited a lieutenant father, Benon Afunde, and he really explained well some of the factors that contributed to this case. And I have also tried to look at your mind processes, the mind process and the experience of people who are who have suicidal thought and who also have survived the suicide attempt. So what are they going through? What are their experience? And I didn't get a time actually to go to things that you need to do. So maybe we can pick up that next time and look at that. We can continue this and pick it up next Saturday. So for me, I will leave you. Okay, please stay tuned. Elizabeth World, it's coming up with Elizabeth. And let me leave you with... Julio Iglesias, When You Tell Me That You Love Me, featuring Dolly Parton.
Get to You Save today, where every penny counts. 2.5 kilos Champion Super Maize Meal, just $34.99. 2 kilograms Sugar King or White Sugar, just $39.99. 750 grams U Brand Mayonnaise, a bargain at $32.99. U Brand Peanut Butter, just $28.99 for 400 grams. 750 millimeters of Right Brand Sunflower Oil, only $28.99. You save. Your low-budget grocery store, where good food cost less.